A look back at 2018, Indiana's U.S. Senate race, the blue wave that wasn't in the Hoosier State. That, plus Curtis Hill, Sunday sales, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending December 28th, 2018.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, we look back at the Hoosier political landscape in 2018. Indiana's critical U.S. Senate race dominated the discussion and the airwaves this year. Democratic incumbent Joe Donnelly faced a tough re-election bid in a state Donald Trump won by 19 points just 2 years before. His principal opponent, auto parts magnate and former state lawmaker Mike Braun, who knocked off a pair of congressmen, Luke Messer and Todd Rokita, in the GOP primary. Braun emerged victorious as national Republicans increased their majority margin in the Senate. So did Mike Braun win this race, or did Joe Donnelly lose it? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwanis, host of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly, Statehouse reporter for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting Statehouse reporter Brandon Smith. Ann Delaney, can Democrats win on the statewide level in Indiana anymore?
You know, I know you're young, okay, but I have heard that before. I've heard that Democrats could never win at the state level. I've heard that Republicans were dead in Indiana. So, you know,
haven't heard
these
that
things,
one in a while, to be fair.
These, you haven't in a while, but those pendulums swing back and forth and will be relevant again at the statewide level. We've got a lot of good mayors in a lot of big towns in this state, and, you know, we'll be fine. And, you know, you have to give credit. Mike Braun won. Joe Donnelly managed to pull off 13% of the Trump voters, making it a lot closer. So there's a lot more people in Indiana who had gone with Trump in 2016 who aren't so sure now. And what they traded was a hardworking senator who put the needs of Hoosiers first for a rubber stamp for Donald Trump. So we'll see how that plays out in the future for Mike Braun. But it's clear that Joe worked very hard and came very close, relatively speaking. And Democrats will be back. You just wait.
Obviously, in the immediate aftermath of the election, a lot of the talk was, well, now the Democrats don't have any statewide elected office holders, and the initial margin of victory seemed pretty significant. But when all was said and done, it was just 51% that Mike Braun won. Is that a decisive victory in your mind?
I think it is, and clearly the margin, because of the margin. But you know, the math on a 13% drawdown isn't totally clean, because it's a presidential electorate versus a midterm electorate, and the voter mix is different. Clearly, Democrats.
And usually, more Republicans vote in midterm elections.
Well, I think Democrats did a good job here of mobilizing in the suburbs. I think what you've seen is when I first started working in politics in Hendricks County, when Mitch Daniels first ran his first time, in Hendricks County, George W. Bush got 70-75% of the vote. Mitch was right up there with him. And over the course of time, we've seen those numbers come down where if in the donut counties, you got the kind of margins that that you would have had 12 or 14 years ago, it would have signaled you might lose statewide. But what we've seen over the course of the last 12 or 14 years is, especially in southern Indiana and all those border or all those river districts, all the local elected officials have flipped over to Republicans. Voters have changed their voter identification, their self-identification from 100-year Democrat, Dixie Democrats, to Republicans. We have all of those seats now. I think the biggest number right now, the most impactful number for me right now is the number of local elected officials we have that Republicans have in Indiana, where we have 92% of the county commissioners, for example.
How many of the mayors?
64? 65?
I think it's big. Quite that high.
It's a big number. It's come down since the historic high in 2015. But we still have a majority, and we still have good, great mayors and a great bench of elected officials going forward.
Donald Trump was here twice in the 3 or 4 days before the election, and this was obviously always going to be a close race. It turned into a close race, though it didn't seem that way a little bit on election night when it was called pretty early, a lot earlier than a lot of people expected. Do you think he had a measurable impact in how this ended up?
I think he benefited Mike Braun, certainly. not that he did everywhere he went. Certainly there were other states across the country where it was probably a negative, and in fact alienated some Republicans and probably energized Democratic voters. So I'm not saying that Donald Trump is a net plus wherever he went this past general election in the days leading up to the balloting, but I think it probably it didn't hurt. Yeah. Certainly Mike Braun in Indiana.
I said, did Mike Braun win? Did Joe Donnelly lose? When you talk about a candidate losing, but in your mind, could Joe Donnelly have done anything else than what he did to try and win this seat?
Well, obviously the big question is whether he aligned himself too much with Trump and away from core Democratic, you know, stances. I think that is the big question. We just don't know whether he went too far the other way.
Well, Governor Eric Holcomb's 2018 was dominated in part by issues at the Department of Child Services. It started with explosive allegations in former director Mary Beth Bonaventura's resignation letter. One charge, she said children would die because of Holcomb's management and policies. An independent investigation delivered a series of recommendations for the agency, some of which have been implemented, while many others are still in process. And the agency recently delivered its funding request for the new budget, nearly $300 million more per year than it got in the last budget to meet the one-time spending they've got in the last year and a half. Mike O'Brien, should Hoosiers be satisfied with the progress at DCS?
I think so. If you look at where we started the year, Hoosiers have a governor who faced a big problem and hit it head on. He didn't make excuses for it. Implement a study to get the facts. That report delivered recommendations that are now being implemented. We're about to deliver a historic amount of funding to that agency. We're already seeing progress. We're seeing caseloads come down. We're seeing higher pay for the caseworkers themselves and the other staff at DCS that were underpaid and overworked for a long time. And we're seeing an increase in adoptions because that's been an area of focus, a 23% increase year over year. So the metrics on the things that can be improved right now are moving in the right direction. But a lot of this is also, we didn't have a legislative session between here and there, so now we have a long one. We have a budget session where funding is going to be increased by half a billion dollars. And some of the other moving parts of that agency are controlled by state law. For example, the caseload ratios are controlled by state law, so you've got to go in and actually make changes to that in order to try to get into them. So
yeah, some of the stuff that's pending, the recommendations, are things that
the legislature has to act on and will act on. Right. And so we'll see very specific legislation going forward this session to make improvements in those areas. So it was a bad problem to start out this, but it's been made much better in the last year.
Nothing in state government turns on a dime. So in terms of the progress you've seen at DCS.
They've made progress. There's no question they've made progress. But this problem has been out there for a long time. I mean, it's been out there under Mitch Daniels. And all of these years, we've looked at it and looked at it and looked at it, and things didn't get done because the money wasn't allocated because it wasn't a priority among Republicans.
It was one of the top priorities of Governor Daniels.
Now, was it? Why was it in shambles when he left?
Because we hired 800 new caseworkers on day one.
And
he created the Department of Child Services
as a standalone agency.
And then
Mike Pence came in and made his changes, and the problem continued, and the problem grew.
The changes that they made didn't work. We couldn't anticipate.
They've made some progress now. That's right.
Well, you knew
we had an opioid epidemic before last year. Okay, we've known that for years and years and years, and no action was taken. So they are finally starting to address a number of the problems. Let's hope they continue with the funding and don't, when the light of scrutiny comes off the agency, they don't start cutting it again, because they keep thinking that the state is a bank and it's not there to protect its citizens.
We talked about this when it first started to come out, all the way back when Bonaventura's letter was first released and since then, as something that could come back on the political side to hurt Eric Holcomb when he inevitably probably makes his reelection bid in 2020. Has his handling of this over the course of 2018 negated any sort of threat to him?
I think he's handled it pretty deftly. And there are a lot of things going on that aren't like big sexy headlines, but, you know, within the agency on mentoring and decentralization and things like that. The only slight question I have is I'm not clear on what metric we're going to use to decide whether it's successful, all the stuff we're doing. Like, is it successful just if our caseload goes down? Is it successful just if we spend less money? Is it successful if we have fewer child deaths? Obviously, that's a big one.
That's always successful. Yeah.
But, you know, I just don't know how we judge it numerically, say, next year when we're looking at it.
That's a good question, because we have the same problem with charter schools. We fund and fund and fund, but we don't look to see whether any of that additional money going in different ways to all of the different reform choice ideas has made one whit of difference in education.
I think it's especially true with DCS. I think your point is well taken there, because some state agencies, they can, the scoreboard can light up for them. If economic development officials land a 1,000 job factory or some, you know, big bump up in employment in Indiana, they can pat themselves on the back. People can say, hey, we. This is an agency where the scoreboard doesn't really light up, because I think the assumption is if kids don't die and kids are being cared for and fed and nourished at a basic level, well, that's what the agency is supposed to do.
And the reality is you're probably never going to get to zero child deaths. It's just,
well, the agency can only, you know, score a loss. It can't ever score a win, which is I don't mean that in any way that, I mean, I think it has improved, and I'm sure it will continue to improve. I think it's headed in the right direction.
It's hard to see the wins.
You don't, yeah, well, nobody, you have, they don't get credit for it, I guess is what I'm saying.
You have problems other than the child death. I mean, the opioid crisis has meant that many of the children born to addicted parents have huge problems, which will explode the Medicaid budget and all, but make life...
Well, that was actually one of the reforms. They embed Medicaid in that agency,
right.
Yeah, which they've done.
But what will happen is that those children are going to face a lifetime of hardship, and we've got to do something to intervene on that before those children are born.
And to credit to Governor Holcomb, that's one of the items on his legislative agenda for this year, is he wants to have the verbal screen for all pregnant mothers to try and figure out, are you addicted to a substance, and then let's try to get them help before that child is born, and hopefully some of that damage gets worse. Well, there was perhaps no more controversial name in 2018 than Attorney General Curtis Hill. Four women, a state lawmaker, and three legislative staffers say Hill groped them at a post-session party in March. Those allegations came to light in July. Now, Hill has remained defiant. He says he did absolutely nothing wrong and that he won't leave office, despite calls to resign from the governor and legislative leaders. A special prosecutor decided not to bring criminal charges, and legislative leaders say they won't do anything more about this situation. Republican legislative leaders say that, even as Hill faces a potential civil suit from the four victims. Now, John Schwanes, how much will 2018 affect Curtis Hill in 2020 if he runs for re-election?
I don't know how a situation like this can't affect his re-election bid. When you have the governor and legislative leadership of your own party, that's a tough situation. Now, if this had been a situation where all of the accusers had been, say, Democratic staffers or Democratic lawmakers, and there was some sense that there was a partisan agenda here, which clearly isn't, nobody's saying that, because we do have a cross-section of women who have come forward. But if that were the case, then he probably could try to use it as a rallying cry and say, look what these people are doing. They're trying to tear down a good...
It's the insulated powers of Indianapolis,
right,
who are out to get it.
Well, I just don't know if it's as effective when it's not partisan as it could be. He might have some success with rallying circling the wagons if, in fact, he could make the case that it was partisan.
Quite frankly, how much... I mean, it will obviously get talked about. There's no question about that. But will it really hurt him all that much in 2020?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, especially since it's a convention fight. I mean, he really only has to sway, like 500 or 600 people? I mean, that's a far different cry. And he can do the whole me against the man, you know, they're trying to keep me down. And to be fair, both Republicans and Democrats I've talked to over this past year, you know, they do question, and some of it is generational. Some people see that he did nothing wrong. And so, you know, that'll be interesting to see when you got a private vote on that.
Well, you shame on the Republican Party if they nominate him for Attorney General again. I mean, just shame on them. The only way it seems to me it has any effect on him for another political office in 2020 is if he decides to run, not in the convention, but maybe to challenge Holcomb or something for the governorship. But shame on the Republican Party if they allow him to be nominated again, because this stuff happened. It was not made up. Generation doesn't excuse it. It's inexcusable conduct, particularly in a statewide elected official and the highest law enforcement officer in the state of Indiana. So,
Nikki's absolutely right. Now, a lot of the statements that have come out from the Inspector General's report to what Republican legislative leaders have said is it's in the hands of the voters now. They're the ones who are going to decide how much this matters. That's true if he gets to November. But we have a convention fight, theoretically, in earlier than that over this. And how does that play out in your mind?
He has been very effective at this kind of, me again, I'm down here in Indianapolis, I'm from Elkhart, it's me against the world, look what they're doing to me. Yeah. And we saw some of that play out in the convention this past summer. Nikki's right, and she's close on the math. I think it's probably going to be 800 people. If it's head-to-head, it'd be 800 people that he's really got to sway. And there's 800 people outstate Indiana that delegates who are going to think maybe he's just getting hosed here. We'll see how that goes. What is not effective at conventions is a heavy hand, top-down party leaders approach where we tell these delegates, these 1,500 or so delegates, that here's the program. You're going to come and vote against Curtis Hill. That is not going to work. They're going to have to come to Indianapolis and watch this story play out. The latest version of this was the $100,000 he may or may not have planned to spend of taxpayer dollars on his legal defense, for example.
There's a long time between now and the
These delegates are going to have to convince themselves that this is unacceptable behavior, that it did happen, that it can't be allowed. Now, lightning has struck in general elections before, like Linda Ritz, on these down-ballot races where it's high-profile, just high-profile enough for people to pay attention to it.
So you're telling us we're going to win the Attorney General's race if you nominate him?
I'm saying you got a chance.
I don't think we have a chance. I think we win it.
I don't think that's right. You're foolish enough to nominate him again. You put some real goofballs up for Attorney General the last couple of cycles, but it's not inconceivable that voters could still be thinking about this when they go down that ballot. It's unusual and it's unlikely, but
it's also
after the balloting at the convention, do we see that, you know, obligatory photo where the governor and every other candidate is raised with raised hands
up at the...
I'm not disclosing how we choreograph these things.
I want to just see how that plays out. There may be a little... There might be some distance there. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, two events from the 2018 legislative session stand out. Lawmakers finally lifting the ban on Sunday alcohol carryout sales, and then the very close of the regular session. The midnight deadline in mid-March for the 2018 session came with a bang as several pieces of legislation fell by the wayside. It prompted a one-day special session 2 months later. Nikki Kelly, will the 2018 session be remembered more for Sunday sales or for that clock striking midnight?
Okay, first of all, I'm very upset that you left out the Say's Firefly
as the top designation of the year. It was so long ago.
Right on the heels of the sugar cream pie.
Absolutely.
Too.
We never passed that.
Sunday, no. Absolutely.
Jerry Tor is going to write you a letter now.
Sunday sales is the big win for most Hoosiers. And you know, only us political junkies really, you know, got all that chaotic ending there at the session. It got all of our adrenaline up, but it was kind of forgotten
a month
later.
Excited if you're a total dork, which we are.
Exactly.
Which we are.
I thought it was awesome, or at least fascinating.
Fascinating.
Obviously, we talked about this a little when the session ended, but lawmakers did, as they always do, pass hundreds of bills. They got a lot done, especially on the workforce development front. We hope that it's heading in the right direction, certainly for the good of the state, but really it's about alcohol, and that's the end of the story.
And tax cuts for corporations.
If you did a poll right now on the streets about, what impact did the final frantic minutes of the 2018 session have on you, most people would probably look at you and say, session 28, what are we even talking about?
Yeah. Not viewers of this show, though.
Not viewers of this show, that's a special kind of premium group.
Cut above.
Cut above, exactly. Are we done fawning and pandering? But it's
never
new year after all. But no, it's I think if in terms of what actually affected Joe and Joanne voter, it's the alcohol sales.
That'll be alcohol that everybody remembers and celebrates.
Yeah, but in some ways, this was exactly what a short session is supposed to be. It was technical corrections, which nobody can talk about, but it has to happen. It was reconciliation of the Indiana tax code following federal tax reform. It was substantive investments in school safety and training. And the things they dealt with in the special session could have been really the only things that were dealt with if you go through kind of the whole list, absent Sunday sales. But I don't know. In some ways, this is exactly what the short session is supposed to be. And now the long session is going to really make up for that in terms of issues because we're not going to have enough time 30 minutes home.
They're going to attack everything.
A way to deal with emergency issues,
right.
Like not being able to buy alcohol.
I was just going to say, doesn't that qualify as an emergency issue?
I guess
for
it did.
Depends who you are. I mean, only if you
don't plan ahead.
In a pinch, it is an emergency.
Wow.
It was alcohol that will last.
It's alcohol that people will remember. I think you're right about that. I think one of the impact of that $180 million tax cut that was done under the rug
is,
when you're talking about not being able to pay teachers more than $32,000 a year, that looms pretty large out there. Sorry.
And that is ongoing money that could have been used.
That's right.
Exactly.
That's right. All right. Now, as you look back at 2018, who is your biggest winner in the Hoosier political scene? We'll start with you and Elaine.
I'd say the House Democratic Caucus. They elected 9 people. The majority of them, or almost all of them, are either first-time candidates, millennials, or women, which diversified the caucus considerably.
And I believe they now have a majority women in the caucus.
Yeah, which is pretty darn good, isn't it? Maybe not from your perspective, but from Nikki and my perspective, it's pretty good.
I think it's pretty good.
Yeah.
Michael Bryan, who's your biggest winner of 2018?
It's clearly Mike Braun, I think. In the Indiana Republican Party, we had record dollars coming in. We had record voter contacts. Every metric of engagement, we broke records as a state party for the cause of electing Mike Braun. And there was a wave to some extent nationwide, certainly in the House of Representatives. And Republicans had a good map in the U.S. Senate, and we were able to kind of survive that right at the national level. In Indiana, Democrats won in some areas where they never should have lost, some seats in Northwest Indiana and Marion County in the state Senate. But so I think we withstood that, and I think in part because of the story we've been able to tell and the accomplishments that the state Republicans have been able to make here, and voters we know distinguish what's happening maybe nationwide that they're not happy with, what's happened in Indiana.
Let's not forget gerrymandering by computer, which is really the reason that you have the margins you have.
We won these majorities on your maps, Ann.
Uh-uh.
Oh, yeah, we did.
Uh-uh.
Oh, yes, we did.
Yeah, but you...
We had a 20-seat margin on your maps.
Right. But
this
now
is a,
you
this
have,
is a generational
now you
change
have,
to people identifying
as
Republicans.
Now we get 40% of the state Senate vote, and you have how many? We have 20% of the seats. That's on your map.
Who's your biggest winner of 2018?
I'd say Mike Braun, not only because of what he accomplished in November... I'd say the tougher battle in many ways for him was the May primary, because he was going up against 2 incumbent members of the U.S. House of Representatives. And
you say that like it's a good thing.
Yeah.
Well, I would just say you could argue that there was some wave that the Trump visits helped him. But when it was just the primary, that was Mike Braun in his blue shirt. Maybe it's the blue shirt concessions that are going to be the big winner here. I don't. Yeah,
the big winner of 2018 is the blue shirt.
The work shirt. Blue work shirt.
Indiana Republican Party. They maintained majorities in the House and Senate. They got a Senate seat, U.S. Senate seat. I think they are the winners.
Now, we got to do the flip side. Who's the biggest loser of 2018? And this time we're starting with you, Mike O'Brien.
I think Democrats are going to have a real hard time looking into 2020 and seeing where they make any gains. There's not even a good short list right now who's going to run for some of these congressional seats, who's going to run for governor, who's going to run for these other big seats that are up. It's almost a generational reset that they've got to look. And they do have some young, good, great young people. A guy like Ryan Hatfield, some of these young guys, they have a really impressive young lawmakers or young mayors. So it's not, I think Republicans are going to be in a bad spot if we ever think, they can't ever make it back. But there's some bright spots in the party, but they've got to look at it as a decades-long project.
I'd put Susan Brooks right up there. I mean, she won the election, okay?
I'm sorry.
That's fine.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, biggest
what?
Loser.
Biggest loser? Yeah, okay. And the reason why is the Republicans have a problem with women. That's clear, all right? They can't elect them. They don't run them. And when they get them there, she was in a position, a fairly good position, and she obviously did that Benghazi nonsense to ingratiate herself with the leadership, and now they demote her. They only have 13 women in Congress, and they demote her. That's a losing proposition.
2 of them from Indiana.
Yeah, there may be 2 from Indiana, but they're 2 irrelevant.
We have 1 white guy in our statewide offices.
And
all the rest are women.
Mm-hmm. I think it's clearly Joe Donnelly. I think losing that Senate seat was a huge blow.
I'd say I agree. Joe Donnelly, not because of any shortcoming on his part, either in his tenure in the Senate or in the campaign. I think he did everything he could do and was smart about the campaign and the numbers, and the fairly narrow margin showed that. But when you're the incumbent U.S. senator and you lose, that's by definition a big deal.
Well, finally, as we approach 2019, as I asked last year, what do you think Indiana's New Year's resolution should be? Quickly, John Schwannis.
Let's get that IU National Basketball Championship back again this year.
Nikki Kelly.
Oh, God, I have no idea. Let's resolve to give teachers a pay raise.
There you go. That's a good
one.
I think we should resolve to stop acting like a bank and start investing in teachers, in preschool, in kindergarten, in general, in this state, in infrastructure.
And Mike O'Brien, you've got the last word.
I'm going to resolve to be kinder to Ann. I've been so mean to
her
the whole year.
That's a good thing. Nice. Would you mind writing that down?
I'm not sure.
On TV.
I'm not sure that's going to go the other way for you.
Consider the source. He's a dork. He already identified himself. So
that's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/IWIR. Or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the new WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.